Econs and Humans. In everyday speech, we call people reasonable if it is possible to reason with them, if their beliefs are generally in tune with reality, and if their preferences are in line with their interests and their values. The word rational conveys an image of greater deliberation, more calculation, and less warmth. But in common language, a rational person is certainly reasonable. For economists and decision theorists, the adjective has an altogether different meaning. The only test of rationality is not whether a person's beliefs and preferences are reasonable, but whether they are internally consistent. A rational person can believe in ghosts so long as all her other beliefs are consistent with the existence of ghosts. A rational person can prefer being hated over being loved, so long as his preferences are consistent. Rationality is logical coherence, reasonable or not. Econs are rational by this definition, but there is overwhelming evidence that humans cannot be. An econ would not be susceptible to priming, what you see is all there is, narrow framing, the inside view, or preference reversals, which humans cannot consistently avoid. The definition of rationality as coherence is impossibly restrictive. It demands adherence to rules of logic that a finite mind is not able to implement. Reasonable people cannot be rational by that definition, but they should not be branded as irrational for that reason. Irrational is a strong word, which connotes impulsivity, emotionality, and a stubborn resistance to reasonable argument. I often cringe when my work with Amos is credited with demonstrating that human choices are irrational, when in fact our research only showed that humans are not well described by the rational agent model. Although humans are not irrational, they often need help to make more accurate judgments and better decisions, and in some cases, policies and institutions can provide that help. These claims may seem innocuous, but they are in fact quite controversial. As interpreted by the important Chicago School of Economics, faith in human rationality is closely linked to an ideology in which it is unnecessary and even immoral to protect people against their choices. Rational people should be free, and they should be responsible for taking care of themselves. Milton Friedman, the leading figure in that school, expressed this view in the title of one of his popular books, Free to Choose. The assumption that agents are rational provides the intellectual foundation for the libertarian approach to public policy. Do not interfere with the individual's right to choose, unless the choices harm others. Libertarian policies are further bolstered by admiration for the efficiency of markets in allocating goods to the people who are willing to pay the most for them. A famous article in that vein has the self-explanatory title, A Theory of Rational Addiction. It explains how a rational agent with a strong preference for intense and immediate gratification may make the rational decision to accept future addiction as a consequence. I once heard Gary Becker, one of the authors of that article, who is also a Nobel laureate of the Chicago School, argue in a lighter vein, but not entirely as a joke, that we should consider the possibility of explaining the so-called obesity epidemic by people's belief that a cure for diabetes will soon become available. He was making a valuable point. When we observe people acting in ways that seem odd, we should first examine the possibility that they have a good reason to do what they do. Psychological interpretations should only be invoked when the reasons become implausible, which Becker's explanation of obesity probably is. In a nation of econs, government should keep out of the way, allowing the econs to act as they choose, so long as they do not harm others. If a motorcycle rider chooses to ride without a helmet, a libertarian will support his right to do so. Citizens know what they are doing, even when they choose not to save for their old age, or when they expose themselves to addictive substances. There is sometimes a hard edge to this position. Elderly people who did not save enough for retirement get little more sympathy than someone who complains about the bill after consuming a large meal at a restaurant. Much is, therefore, at stake in the debate between the Chicago School and the behavioral economists who reject the extreme form of the rational agent model. Freedom is not a contested value. All the participants in the debate are in favor of it. But life is more complex for behavioral economists than for true believers in human rationality. No behavioral economist favors a state that will force its citizens to eat a balanced diet and to watch only television programs that are good for the soul. For behavioral economists, however, freedom has a cost, which is borne by individuals who make bad choices, and by a society that feels obligated to help them. The decision of whether or not to protect individuals against their mistakes therefore presents a dilemma for behavioral economists. The economists of the Chicago School do not face that problem because rational agents do not make mistakes. For adherents of this school, freedom is free of charge. In 2008, the economist Richard Thaler and the jurist Cass Sunstein teamed up to write a book, Nudge, which quickly became an international bestseller and the Bible of behavioral economics. Their book introduced several new words into the language, including econs and humans. It also presented a set of solutions to the dilemma of how to help people make good decisions without curtailing their freedom. Thaler and Sunstein advocate a position of libertarian paternalism, in which the state and other institutions are allowed to nudge people to make decisions that serve their own long-term interests. The designation of joining a pension plan as the default option is an example of a nudge. It is difficult to argue that anyone's freedom is diminished by being automatically enrolled in the plan when they merely have to check a box to opt out. As we saw earlier, the framing of the individual's decision, Thaler and Sunstein call it choice architecture, has a huge effect on the outcome. The nudge is based on sound psychology, which I described earlier. The default option is naturally perceived as the normal choice. Deviating from the normal choice is an act of commission, which requires more effortful deliberation, takes on more responsibility, and is more likely to evoke regret than doing nothing. These are powerful forces that may guide the decision of someone who is otherwise unsure of what to do. Humans, more than econs, also need protection from others who deliberately exploit their weaknesses, and especially the quirks of System 1 and the laziness of System 2. Rational agents are assumed to make important decisions carefully and to use all the information that is provided to them. An econ will read and understand the fine print of a contract before signing it, but humans usually do not. An unscrupulous firm that designs contracts that customers will routinely sign without reading has considerable legal leeway in hiding important information in plain sight. A pernicious implication of the rational agent model in its extreme form is that customers are assumed to need no protection beyond ensuring that the relevant information is disclosed. The size of the print and the complexity of the language in the disclosure are not considered relevant. An econ knows how to deal with small print when it matters. In contrast, the recommendations of Nudge require firms to offer contracts that are sufficiently simple to be read and understood by human customers. It is a good sign that some of these recommendations have encountered significant opposition from firms whose profits might suffer if their customers were better informed. A world in which firms compete by offering better products is preferable to one in which the winner is the firm that is the best at obfuscation. A remarkable feature of libertarian paternalism is its appeal across a broad political spectrum. The flagship example of behavioral policy, called Save More Tomorrow, was sponsored by Congress by an unusual coalition that included extreme conservatives as well as liberals. Save More Tomorrow is a financial plan that firms can offer to their employees. Those who sign on allow the employer to increase their contribution to their saving plan by a fixed proportion whenever they receive a raise. The increased saving rate is implemented automatically until the employee gives notice that she wants to opt out of it. This brilliant innovation, proposed by Richard Thaler and Shlomo Ben-Artzi in 2003, has now improved the savings rate and brightened the future prospects of millions of workers. It is soundly based in the psychological principles that readers of this book will recognize. It avoids the resistance to an immediate loss by requiring no immediate change. By tying increased savings to pay raises, it turns losses into foregone gains, which are much easier to bear, and the feature of automaticity aligns the laziness of System 2 with the long-term interests of the workers. All this, of course, without compelling anyone to do anything he does not wish to do, and without any misdirection or artifice. The appeal of libertarian paternalism has been recognized in many countries, including the UK and South Korea, and by politicians of many stripes, including Tories and the Democratic administration of President Obama. Indeed, Britain's government has created a new small unit whose mission is to apply the principles of behavioral science to help the government better accomplish its goals. The official name for this group is the Behavioral Insight Team, but it is known both in and out of government simply as the Nudge Unit. Thaler is an advisor to this team. In a storybook sequel to the writing of Nudge, Sunstein was invited by President Obama to serve as Administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, a position that gave him considerable opportunity to encourage the application of the lessons of psychology and behavioral economics in government agencies. The mission is described in the 2010 report of the Office of Management and Budget. Readers of this book will appreciate the logic behind specific recommendations, including encouraging clear, simple, salient, and meaningful disclosures. They will also recognize background statements such as, presentation greatly matters if, for example, a potential outcome is framed as a loss, it may have more impact than if it is presented as a gain. The example of a regulation about the framing of disclosures concerning fuel consumption was mentioned earlier. Additional applications that have been implemented include automatic enrollment in health insurance, a new version of the dietary guidelines that replaces the incomprehensible food pyramid with the powerful image of a food plate loaded with a balanced diet, and a rule formulated by the USDA that permits the inclusion of messages such as 90% fat-free on the label of meat products, provided that the statement 10% fat is also displayed contiguous to, in lettering of the same color, size, and type as, and on the same color background as, the statement of lean percentage. Humans, unlike econs, need help to make good decisions, and there are informed and unintrusive ways to provide that help.